Hello, and welcome to the next installation of the Grant Street Experience. I'm your host, Grant Irvin, and today I have my fabulous co-host with me, Rebecca Kiernan. Rebecca, how are you today?
Hey, morning. Great.
Yeah. Who is our fabulous guest today on the Grant Street Experience? Do you want to give them the intro?
Today we have the wonderful Leah Friedman, Manager of Community Affairs Office. Hey, Leah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great. Leah, how are you doing today?
I'm good. This is my third day back in the office.
Third day back. So like office day three, like captain's log day three. Like this is a major milestone.
Yes.
So so how is it, you know, before we get into all the particulars of questions that we have for you, how is it to be back in the office?
It was really strange. The first day I came in and I had post-it notes from March 13th, 2020 on my computer.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a time capsule and a little bit dusty, but it was really nice to see people.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah, get some time with the team.
I've been in and out of the office intermittently over the last month and a half or so. And like, you're exactly right about the time capsule. Like I walked into my office and I have four whiteboards and they all had stuff from like 2019, 2020 on them. It was both kind of bizarre, but also at the same point in time, I was like, oh, we got that done. We got that done. We didn't do that. So it was somewhat uplifting, but also like a good reality check, I think, too. Did you have a favorite post-it note that you found or something that you were like, oh, man, I forgot to call that person? Or
well, so we had Eric, who's in my office, we had these giant pieces of, you know, the giant pieces of paper that you can stick on the wall.
Yep.
We had kind of manically like been going through our Love Your Block awardees from last year. There were 54 of them and we had to choose 20 or something. And there was just all of these scribbles and like wild writing and notes on them. And all of those projects have happened since then, but they happened during COVID. So it was funny to see that beginning step.
Nice.
In the program.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there were some long nights.
We're going to come back and revisit Love Your Block, but maybe just to kind of get us warmed up and started here, it's super excited. As Rebecca was telling me we were going to talk with you today, I was like, oh, this is really cool because you got your city Start With Us in the Office of
Sustainability. Love you.
And I was like, wow. I was like, you know, it feels good to see, you know, someone like yourself and kind of how their career trajectory has grown. And when you started with us, you were an AmeriCorps fellow, right?
Yes.
But maybe give a little bit of background on who is Leah Friedman and how you came to the city of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so let's see. I was not born in Pittsburgh. I was born in Chicago, but I moved here when I was very young. So not born and raised, but mostly raised in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh Public School graduate. I went to Kappa High School. And I went to the University of Pittsburgh. So definitely shaped by the city and many of its institutions. And after college, so I majored in urban studies in college and I got really interested in just how cities work and what cities are all about. And after college, I went to an AmeriCorps program called the National Civilian Community Corps. And so I got the opportunity to kind of travel the country and work on different projects. One of those projects was a disaster relief project in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. There was really severe flooding there in 2016. And so we were mucking and gutting houses and wearing Tyvek suits in 90 degree heat.
Wow.
Yeah, but we really got to see the like the devastation that climate change and severe flooding and stuff like that had on a community in Baton Rouge, but, you know, obviously nationwide. And so that's when I sort of started to get interested in resilience and resilience in communities and cities. So when I was thinking about what I wanted to do after my first AmeriCorps year ended, I was just searching around and I saw that your team, the City of Pittsburgh Sustainability and Resilience Team, was looking for a VISTA to do similar work and sort of think about those things and what it meant for cities. And I applied. And yeah, that's when I met Rebecca for the first time. And I came on with you all. So that was really exciting. And I got to learn about all the things that you were doing. And I just got very attached and passionate to the City of Pittsburgh and its vision and stuff like that.
That's awesome. Rebecca, maybe run us back a little bit about that AmeriCorps resilience program and how we came to that. I mean, that was a pretty interesting time, I think, when we learned of those resources and we were trying to build a team, and maybe kind of a little, some of the backstory there.
Yeah, when I first started, we had a grant through Cities of Service, which I think had spun out of the Bloomberg administration, is that right? Yeah. Into its own nonprofit. And so we got 2 years of AmeriCorps fellows. So there were teams of two. Leah was in the second cohort. But they were focused on city resilience. So they kind of went back and forth. They had a Cities of Service contact and cohort there with different cities. So Pittsburgh was one of, I think, like 5 or 6 cities that had these VISTAs. So they had that cohort. And then they worked with us on different projects. So Leo was part of the second cohort and got to work on a project. So we co-opted that year the Love Your Block program and morphed it into Love Your Resilient Block. And Leah got to take that over, and we had a super fun time kind of strengthening those programs. So communities, normally would apply for a Love Your Block grant, but we would work with them to try to strengthen them so that they were achieving, stormwater management or tree canopy coverage for, heat relief or something like that. So yeah, it was super fun, and it was right when I first started, and Leah was obviously awesome and stuck around. So it's exciting to have her back on our podcast.
Awesome. Leah, what was for you, what was that experience like going from Baton Rouge, right? To Pittsburgh. But also more importantly, I'm interested to learn about kind of the exchange between you and the other fellows, and also, kind of having that experience of gaining that responsibility right off the bat to kind of run a program and organize activities. What was that like for you?
Yeah. So after my first year in AmeriCorps, and like I said, we were in that first year, and what I was doing in Baton Rouge and other communities around the country was very hands-on, like field work oriented. And it was sort of like, the problem has happened. Somebody has figured out what needs to be done. And then that's sort of where me and my team at the time would come in. And it was really valuable experience, I think, because it's like every little detail and all of the hardships and all of the hard work that goes into, for example, just like cleaning up after a disaster. Very valuable experience, but also a little bit frustrating because you're like, I want to know how we got here. Mm. And sort of be part of maybe preventing that or learning more about it and shaping not just how the solutions happen, but also how you can maybe work toward a world where there aren't as many natural disasters or people aren't as affected by them. So coming in and just being like a listening ear, I think, at the beginning, with your team was exactly what I was looking for, because that's sort of what you all are talking about all the time. So it was eye-opening for me as a young, I think I was 22, 23 at the time. So that was great. And then, so the AmeriCorps program had us, they flew us to conferences with the other fellows across the country who are doing similar work across the country. And that was really valuable too, because we got to kind of talk about the similarities and the differences between our city, like Pittsburgh, and for example, El Paso, Texas had AmeriCorps fellows as well. So some of the shared challenges, some of the differences and what that looked like. And I still talk to some of those fellows today. So it's kind of like a network of people who are many of them still in city government. And it was a great opportunity. And I highly recommend AmeriCorps programs to anybody coming out of college who aren't sure exactly, you know, what their path is.
Because, I mean, go into that a little bit deeper. What are some of the values that you see?
So I think one, I don't want to say easy, but it's a great first step to like get your foot in the door in a world. Like it may, yeah. And it's not, you know, it's a 1-year commitment. It's service oriented. So, you know, if people aren't necessarily sure what they want to do, they're not, maybe not quite ready to launch into a first job per se, but want to learn more about something, make connections, meet people, see like how things function, in reality, rather than, you know, like in a class or something like that. It can provide all of those things.
So like the hands-on experience and the problem solving that you have to go through. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also a really good way to, because I did 2 programs when I was right out of college also. And it's a really good way to like go to some random city or town and kind of, excuse me, plop down and like have a whole team that works with you. It's like an easy way to ease into a new place.
How do they determine the locations for the AmeriCorps fellows? Because you were in a couple, what locations were you in, Rebecca?
I was in rural Washington State, first teaching and tutoring pregnant and parenting teenagers. And then I went to New Mexico around the border near El Paso, teaching after school programs.
And then Baton Rouge was the only place for you, Leah, before you came to Pittsburgh?
No. So I was in kind of a different program. It was a traveling program. So we would do 6 weeks at a time in different communities, primarily in the Midwest. So I was in Iowa for a lot of it. I spent some time in National Park in Illinois. Where else did we go? We were in Ohio for parts of it, Baton Rouge. Milwaukee. We got to see a lot of places.
And like a mixture of urban and rural experiences or?
Yep. Yeah. So for example, in Milwaukee, we were doing youth oriented programs. We were actually teaching little cute, adorable children how to make maple syrup and leading that program. And then something totally different, like doing trail work at a national park or, you know, they had everyone in this program is on call for emergency, for disaster relief. So that's when we got called out to the South and went down and did some mucking and gutting of houses that were completely destroyed by flooding.
That's amazing. It has to be like an eye-opening experience for you to, in both of you, I guess, in terms of like going from different locations from, you know, Long Island, in your case, Rebecca, or upstate New York, or Western New York, excuse me, or Pittsburgh in your case, and then being kind of parachuted into totally unfamiliar territory. Like, how does that shape your thinking or kind of your reaction, I guess, in terms of the engagements? Because you're not really trained for it per se, right? Like, you're not an expert in maple syrup, as far as I know, but like having to kind of teach and educate folks, like what's that like?
I'm an expert now.
You're an expert now.
Yeah, no, it was just really exciting. I mean, we had a lot of support and, you know, we were learning as a team, but I think it was, you know, it was part of the reason why, like, the lessons learned there were part of the reasons why I wanted to continue to be involved and sort of put roots down in local government, because I saw in all of the places that we visited, how much of an impact either like funding from state or local government or response from local government had on everywhere that I went. So it was cool to kind of draw those connections, but also realize how different the United States is just as a vast land. There's so many differences, different people, different challenges. So it was really eye-opening.
You know, it's interesting, just to call back to a prior episode, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with Paul Kendrick, who runs an organization called Rust Belt Rising. And one of the things that of individuals that we talked about, he's also an author, and he brought up a guy by the name of Harris Wofford, who political historians here in Pittsburgh will remember that he was Senator Harris Wofford for the state of Pennsylvania. But he was really instrumental in both the creation of the Peace Corps under the Kennedy administration and then the AmeriCorps program. And so it's cool to like see those connections in the growth of service and like how important service is, I think, in kind of the, you know, the development of professionals, particularly in local government, right?
Yeah. And even today, there have been conversations in the news lately about revamping the Civilian Climate Corps.
Yeah.
Which is like the program that I did was the community, what's it? National Community Civilian Corps. It was loosely based off of the Civilian Climate Corps that came out of the New Deal. And so like as part of this big infrastructure plans that the Biden administration has and the country has, kind of looping all back around to, you know, jobs, putting people to work and working on climate change. I would love to see that program revamped.
Super important. It's a big program that's supported by our friends at Reimagine Appalachia. Little bit of personal history too. My dad, which is a whole, you'll get the timeline, you'll ask questions, but my dad was a member of the CCC back in the New Deal. And so such a kind of a fundamental, you know, connection in terms of like, he grew up in rural southeastern Ohio, so like the heart of Appalachia, and you know, totally formed his mindset in terms of service and kind of his life and the things that he did, you know, whether as a professional or volunteer basis. And so such a formative program. So it's so great that you were able to kind of get so much value of it. But now you're here with local government. Talk about kind of that that transition from AmeriCorps fellow into the Office of Community Affairs and what that's been like for you.
Yeah, so like Rebecca was saying, when I was a fellow with Sustainability and Resilience, we were working on the Love Your Block program, which actually lives in the Office of Community Affairs. So I became, throughout my time as a fellow, I became very connected with the office, just because we were working on this program and fleshing things out and, you know, working to expand and improve it. And I was lucky that at the end of my service year, Community Affairs was looking for new community liaisons to kind of build out the team and go out into the Pittsburgh neighborhoods and communities and continue running the programs, but also sort of functioning as a bridge between communities on the neighborhood level in Pittsburgh and local government, and sort of being a face, consistent face that can be out there connecting with people. So, you know, that sounded great to me and I was really excited to come on with them. And so, yeah, that's what I've been doing for, I think, 3 years now. I've been in the Office of Community Affairs. It's really different because we sort of talk about ourselves as the people in local government who know a little bit about a lot. So we know a little bit about basically everything that's happening in the city of Pittsburgh. And we kind of convey what's happening, try to tell those stories to people that we meet in the city. And then, you know, if they want to dive deeper, we're able to make those connections and get them involved with the people they need to be involved in. Whereas when I was in Sustainability and Resilience, you all have, well, you may argue it's broad, but a narrow focus in a way, you know, on one specific thing. So it sort of gives me a bird's eye view of how that stuff kind of fell into the larger city of Pittsburgh vision.
And it's interesting too, because you guys in community affairs, many cases are like the front line or the first point of contact for a community organization. Can you share a little bit about like that in a normal time? We'll get into the COVID conversation in a bit, but like in a normal time, you guys have a pretty hectic schedule. Can you run through like what the normal day in the life is like?
Yeah, sure. So, well, first I want to start off with something that might seem like common sense to us, but a lot of people don't know that there are 92 neighborhoods in the city of Pittsburgh.
What's the 92nd?
I don't know what the order is. I know we say 90, but there's neighborhoods. So like, for example, Oakland has like 4 neighborhoods within it.
Sub neighborhoods.
Like. Right. But they are like, they're real neighborhoods. It just, sometimes you would just think Oakland is a neighborhood. No, there's South Oakland, West Oakland, North Oakland, Oak Cliff, which is small, but yeah. So there's, and each of these, you know, every neighborhood has its own identity. People take a lot of pride in their neighborhoods in Pittsburgh. That's true citywide. And so connecting with those, with people on that level, is really important. It's important to the city of Pittsburgh. It's important to community affairs. So we do our best, throughout the pandemic as well, but especially before, to attend their neighborhood community meetings, which are generally monthly, and they're run by volunteers and hardworking people who are just trying to, you know, doing their best to organize their own communities. So we just kind of show up, and we have a lot to say about what's going on at the city. And, you know, it's an ongoing conversation, kind of like an open dialogue. We talk about what we're doing. They talk about what they're doing. We bring their priorities and concerns back and make sure it gets to the right people. But that means that we go to, so there are 4 of us. We may have a community meeting every night. So, you know, we may be out in the field attending, you know, 80 community meetings a month between the 4 of us, or, you know, some variation of that depending on the week and the month. So it's a lot, but we get to meet a lot of people and yeah, learn a lot about what's going on in all the corners of our city.
So I'm a veteran community-based organization. Full disclosure, I'm the president emeritus now of the Morningside Area Community Council. Mm-hmm. And so those organizations, I totally dig what you're saying. Like, those organizations are so critical to creating connection and cohesion within the neighborhood, as well as, you know, bringing the issues of the neighborhood to the forefront of the city. But I've always been amazed and valued the community affairs team, because you are that link to like what's happening across, you know, city government or different programs or policies, as well as being kind of that, that transmission system, if you will, from the needs of the residents to the, you know, how the city can help out. With that said, is there some, and you don't have to like call out by name, but like, I know some of these community organizations can have a pretty good time. Are there like meetings that you're like, oh yeah, we get to go to so-and-so, because of, you know, they're having a potluck or, you know, something like that, that like, what are some of the things that some of the communities are doing to help make their monthly meetings more interesting, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I will shout out Morningside Area Community Council, because every year they have an amazing event called Mac and Cheese.
That was a layup. So yeah.
I thought so. So Morningside Area Community Council, for short, is Mac. And so they have Mac and Cheese, which is a mac and cheese bake-off. And you get to try all types of mac and cheese made by people in the neighborhood, but also I think outside the neighborhood.
I think that like there's been some, you know, mac and cheese connoisseurs and aficionados that have imported their wares over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a really fun event. That was actually one of the last events that I went to before the pandemic started in 2020. Our team and some other people from the mayor's office always try to go and grab our tickets fast because they sell quickly. That's one of like the creative ways, an example of a creative way that a community organization raises money for their year of programming and events and you know, stuff that they want to do on the neighborhood level. And even throughout the pandemic, you know, we've had to get, communities have gotten really creative. We've tried to support them in those efforts in terms of maybe meeting outside, doing more walkthroughs, walking through a neighborhood just to see what's going on, check in, Socially distanced, masked, all of that stuff. So even throughout the pandemic, there's been a chance for creativity with meeting and stuff like that.
That's awesome. Yeah. Rebecca, you were interested too in talking a little bit about kind of the community engagement process and like how the pandemic, I mean, what were some of your thoughts there?
Yeah, I'm interested in like, what's the difference between like the Twitterverse where things feel a little bit, I don't know, angry sometimes versus like what's actually happening on the ground and like, you know, going on in communities, like, or what they're asking of the city. Like, do you see a difference between like some of the social media versus like actually, you know, talking to people about real issues instead of, you know, just in however many characters?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, well, first of all, I just think it's a lot easier to say certain things in a certain way on the internet. I mean, I think, you know, we can all agree that there's some level of animosity on the internet that, you know, people can just be mean, and that's just what it is. But I think when you're talking with people who have been involved in their neighborhood for 50 years or 10 years, or even just started, there's a huge shift because, first of all, people have very basic concerns. You know, it might not be something that's trending on Twitter, but it might be like our crosswalk is faded and needs to be changed. And, you know, we want bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure on our street because there was a crash recently and we're worried about our safety. You know, the city has to worry about keeping sidewalks clean and vacant lots maintained and keeping the streetlights on and doing all of those things responsibly and efficiently, and the best we can. And I think that people in neighborhoods have, you know, similar investments in those things. So one, I think there's just more focus on like quality of life issues in neighborhoods, like those things that you're going to walk out your front door and how does that make you feel? Mm-hmm. Like, are systems working for me in my daily life? Like, can I get to where I need to go? Is the trash can empty? Do I feel good about my neighborhood park? Do I have a neighborhood park, et cetera, et cetera. And so, people can be, you know, I think it's valid that emotions run high around some of those things because there's a lot of history and things that go into what that looks like today. But I think when you show up and you show up on behalf of the city of Pittsburgh, like that means a lot to people and they're willing to work with you and they have solutions and they know what their issues are. And they're happy to have their voices heard and to sort of have a more coordinated relationship. And on Twitter, it's sort of often like a one-way conversation that sort of spirals and gets mm-hmm. retweeted. And, you know, I think there's a little bit less solution-oriented language and action on the internet. And when you're working with people, it's hard for them to just, you know, totally trash you to your face.
Yeah, like it's almost like anytime somebody sends a comment on social media, it's literally like just blowing off steam. But like to your point, it's not constructive, right?
Right.
That's interesting. Wow.
What's changed like from pre-pandemic or even like when you first started until now? Like, has there been, you talk to so many. I remember like when I was bagging groceries and you see so many people per day, like there would be themes that would occur, like, you know, one day would be, I forgot my wallet day or whatever. So like when you see that many people, like, are you seeing changes like in, I don't know, just like themes of what people are asking for or how they're participating like over time?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. So one thing that we've noticed, and so the Department of Mobility and Infrastructure was created in 2018. So that's pretty recent. And since then they've sort of put in place and sort of have been building up some pretty intense traffic calming programs and things like that. And as those things become more popular and more known, we realize that people are addicted to traffic calming. They love it. Like, I think that department has, it's like almost thousands of requests, for traffic calming on residential streets. Like, people, have become really interested and invested in finding ways to make cars go slower around them. So that's one big one that we see, and everyone wants to know how they can do it. And so that's something I think in the future we'll see more of, wow, just based on need and demand and interest. But, you know, we've also seen more and more issues around like landslides, flooding, extreme weather, like things that are relevant to the work that you all do, that deeply affects people because, you know, when we have three giant storms, there are trees all over the place, the power is out, your basement got flooded, et cetera, like those are things that people I think are increasingly concerned about as well.
Well, that's interesting. Good. I mean, so in some regards, like your life's coming full circle back to your days with us and AmeriCorps. That's interesting. Like, but unpack that traffic calming addiction a little bit. So it's in the affirmative. Like, people want to see more traffic calming measures on their streets. Is that right?
Well, I think this is a good example of like the internet versus on the ground in a neighborhood. Like if you looked on Facebook or Twitter, you may not get that impression. Mm-hmm. People feel like traffic and driving and cars and streets is something that people are very passionate about one way or the other.
One way or the other.
Pun intended. Yeah. So I think, you know, people who spend time outside of their cars in neighborhoods noticing that and it's later confirmed by DOMI, often by the Department of Mobility and Infrastructure, often that cars are speeding through their neighborhood. It's creating unsafe conditions, and they want to be able to kind of live their lives in their neighborhoods, and you know, there's so much education that goes into what can make that happen. Cause it's not always just a stop sign. People right. say we need a stop sign, and DOMI will, you know, and now my team has been educated by the Department of Mobility and Infrastructure to know how to kind of respond to that at first. If we're at a community meeting, like we know if someone says we need a stop sign, we say, well, you know, a stop sign is not always the best option. People don't generally care about signs. It's like the environment that's going to mm-hmm. help people slow down more naturally. Like how can we have traffic calming that just organically works? We create a streetscape that makes a car go slower. It's not just a stop sign, might not be a speed bump, might not be a crosswalk, all of these things. So we've been educated throughout our time just because we had to be able to have these conversations with residents and neighborhoods. And then we're able to kind of guide residents through the process that's set up now, to, you know, make those things happen, in their neighborhoods.
You know, it's so interesting too, because this goes back to, the origins, right? Like the bike lash, because bike lanes, I mean, they're effectively a type of traffic calming measure, but also kind of an inclusive measure to allow for other forms of mobility, right? And so now what we're seeing, and I think this is, I'm going to make a statement, but it's a question, like what we're starting to see is kind of that ebb switch where people want more of these types of measures to make their streets safer and more engaging. Wow.
Yeah. And I think like change is hard, and especially in Pittsburgh, it seems. You know, people, like I said, people have a lot of pride in their neighborhoods, a lot of pride in their cities. And I think they just, at the end of the day, like really want to make sure that any changes that are happening are actually going to benefit them and the people around them, the people that they care about. But sometimes we compare, you know, our lives or shenanigans to Parks and Rec, where there's like a town hall. And this is no offense to anybody who has anything to say,
people,
but
caring loudly at you,
like, people caring loudly. Yeah. And so you know, we have to remember that. And, you know, it's not that the city is always right about everything. But there's definitely a learning curve and mm-hmm. change is hard, but I think people are starting to come around to some of the changes that the city has implemented in the last few years.
You know, it's interesting. Just a couple of quick reflections. I've had two really interesting interactions on this in the past couple of days. We had an alley party with our neighbors for Father's Day. And my one neighbor, Carol, who we love dearly, she was talking to me about different stuff. And she's like, Grant, the bike lanes. Let's talk about the bike lanes, right? Which I think every Pittsburgher and anybody who works for the city has had that conversation. One of the things that came to mind for me is about I've had to do it as a cyclist, but I think also as a motorist, like educating drivers about how to drive with bike lanes. Right. And that was like her big point was like, you know, I'm not against bike lanes. It's just, I've been driving down Negley Avenue for 45 years. Like, how do I learn to navigate? That was one point. The second point, I was on a call yesterday with the Playful Pittsburgh Collaborative. And it's a network that we joined along with five other cities through the Brookings Institute. And they had a group from Philadelphia on who they have adopted, just like we're seeing the adoption of outdoor dining. Like one of the big things, and we saw this here in my neighborhood, which was awesome through the pandemic, kids having the ability to access the streets on their bikes or like, you know, play in the street because there was no traffic. And it was calmer and it was safer. And so they have in Philadelphia created a really interesting program where they call it Playful Streets, which is I'm maybe plugging this for a future Love Your Block project.
Yeah.
But like the opportunity for kids and kind of like picture like Open Streets meets Roving Art Cart.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Like creating like a playground in the street. And so, you know, they make the safety measures, but then they'll put up like water features or hopscotch or like all kinds of sort of stuff. And the kids get to play in the street. And it was just really cool to see. And I was like, oh, we can totally do that. So yeah. Future Love Your Block project application. So
you have a new round out of Love Your Block?
Yeah, we're actually scoring applicants now. So we will have about 13 projects this summer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Give a little bit of insight on what is Love Your Block. Like, I think this is so awesome.
Yeah, we keep talking about it.
Let's actually talk about it.
Yeah, sure. So Love Your Block is a mini grant program from the city of Pittsburgh. It's usually a $1,500 award to a neighborhood group or community organization to do some kind of beautification or some kind of improvement project in a neighborhood. And so we found that like a lot of times it's such a small grant, but sometimes these smaller organizations have projects that sort of fall in the middle. Like they need more than the $500 that they could raise from their local businesses, but they don't need $20,000 to do an entire, you know, renovation of a space. And so that $1,500 to $3,000 mark kind of works well for, you know, maintaining a community garden or remediating, you know, a blighted lot that's sort of sitting there and they want it to have value in the community or something like that. And so we do a round of those every summer, and that's probably one of my favorite things that we do. Cause it's so fun to go to all the sites and like see all of the great things that people do. And usually it's beyond, like they get the $1,500, but then they are able to do so much more with it because they can tell people, hey, we have $1,500 to do this. And then, you know, they get people say, oh, well, I can donate this and I'll participate. I'll do that. And oftentimes it turns into like a much bigger thing. And it's, yeah, it's so fun.
It always turns into a much bigger thing, I think.
Yeah.
But it's so much fun. I mean, I've been on multiple ends of the program. Like it's so much fun as a community member, I think, to have that ability to be creative and innovative. I mean, are there some things where, like, when you guys, you don't have to, you know, give a specific example, but like, it has to be so much fun to review those applications and be like, wow, they came up with this. Like, this is really cool. Like, are you constantly blown away or surprised?
Yeah. Yeah, we have. So one from last year is the Friendship Community Group. They have been working sort of as a group, but also as individual property owners to have pollinator gardens all over the neighborhood and sort of just like encouraging people to do that on their own plots of land, which is great. I mean, it obviously encompasses, you know, like a native species. It has some climate stuff in there. It's beautification. It's like all of those rolled into one. And then for Love Your Block last year, they wanted to beautify an alley, a pretty big alley that a lot of people spend time in, especially during the pandemic, because that's kind of all you can do. Right. And so they put like pollinator gardens along the alley in the public right of way. And it turned out so beautiful. And it's something that's the type of thing that's going to be there, you know, forever. Like they will continue maintaining it. And it also got people interested to start their own in their backyard or their front yard. And they had an event to tie it all together. Oh, and it also got people wanting to like paint the back of their garages so that the rest of the alley looked good, you know, like it kind of was that motivating factor, to really elevate that space.
That's so awesome. When you said pollinator garden, see Rebecca's face.
I know.
Love it. That's good. You're going to have to go check it out.
Yeah. What alley is it?
It's Frederica Way.
Okay.
In Friendship. Cool. I think it's Way. It might be technically street, but yeah, it's a big, big alley in Friendship, and the neighbors were all really involved and excited. And I got to meet a bunch of them. So yeah, it was great. Great project. Very creative.
You know, one of the things like through the pandemic for me that, you know, we got the, prior to the pandemic, we got a dog, and like many people, like it was a real salvation, I think, through the, you know, the heart of the pandemic in particular. But one of my epiphanies is like our alley network are really a network of urban trails.
Mm.
And so like when you walk along them, like I particularly started to walk along because they were quieter, you know, like you have your headphones in and you're listening to music or a podcast or whatever. And so there's a lot of serenity, or can be a lot of serenity in an alleyway. And so the idea of beautifying it, that's really fabulous, I think. It's almost like an on the ground. It's like a low line instead of the high line in New York. We have our low lines, and they can be our alleyways.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of those alleys in the city like run parallel to main streets.
Yep.
So they're really good alternatives for people walking, biking, all that kind of stuff. It'd be nice if they looked, you know, nice while you were going through them
up, right?
Yeah.
One question, we were coming close on time, but a couple more questions I have for you. One in particular is this idea of like community engagement. And you guys lead a lot of those efforts, you know, both in person, but now also online through tools like Engage PGH. Any reflections on that in terms of, because when you were on our team, you were helping to lead and organize like some of the in-person events. What are some of the new things that are where you see community engagement going? Now that we've been through like this pandemic and we have what I would call a deeper toolbox, right? With some online tools, in-person tools, like what do you see next for community engagement?
Yeah, that is probably what I spend about 95% of my time thinking about at this point. So like you were saying, the pandemic sort of opened up a path for creativity in a lot of things. So like, for example, like the streeteries using parking spaces for outdoor dining and things like that, closing down streets, Highland Park Reservoir Loop, things like that, that was closed so that people closed to cars. So stuff like that, definitely the pandemic allowed for creativity in those types of things. It also allowed for creativity in public engagement, basically because local governments, and it's not just Pittsburgh, it was really a global situation, had no choice but to kind of expand the tools in our toolbox and figure out how are we going to reach people if we can't be together. And so I think one of the first things, like when we were trying to figure that out, one of the first things that we realized or thought about or at least acknowledged was that, you know, the public engagement that we have been doing isn't necessarily perfect to start with, because while community groups are so important, and they mean so much to neighborhoods, and they're a great kind of in between the public and the city, they don't necessarily represent everybody. Everybody doesn't necessarily have the time or the energy or the knowledge or the capacity to participate in a community group. And because of that, you know, they may be left out from a lot of conversations. And so I think the city did a number of things, got very creative. We started Engage PGH, which is an online engagement platform. It's engage.pittsburghpa.gov. And basically it's a one-stop shop where residents can go see projects, ongoing projects that the city is working on, and provide feedback on them. And that sounds really basic, but that's something that we didn't have before. Yeah. We didn't have all of those projects that are currently happening that are we're currently seeking feedback on in one place. So just that alone, and we've gotten feedback from the community or from communities across the city that has been really helpful. Obviously, that, you know, that's a website. We're missing a lot of people with just a website, but I think that the idea moving forward is that this is now a tool in our toolbox. Mm-hmm. You don't have to come to a public meeting. You don't have to go to a community organization or be part of one to participate in the public process. But if that's like how you prefer to do things, the city will meet you there as well as soon as it's safe. And so kind of those things combined, I think, will be part of the future.
Awesome. I mean, so like a net gain, I would say, in terms of the amount of participation, like there's more, is it fair to say there's been more touch points?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow. And there are they quality touch points too, like in terms of like the feedback and like how that information is retrieved or received, I guess. Good stuff.
I think so. I mean, I think just by nature of it all sort of being in the same place and standardized in a way, makes for more streamlined data that departments and staff can use to inform their projects. There's just also sort of been, I mean, one of my goals is standardizing public engagement across the city of Pittsburgh. So, you know, one department may sort of have different capacity or a different way of doing things than another. But there are, you know, there's best practices around how this stuff works, and hoping to get the city in a place where a resident, you know, no matter what the project is, no matter who the department is, like, is going to know what that process is going to look like, for their feedback to reach the right place. Awesome. So yeah, I think residents can look forward to that, improving and progressing, and also, you know, being part of that improvement.
Rebecca, how have you've used Engage PGH on the other end as a recipient of information? How has that worked out for you? And
yeah, projects? I've used it a little bit. We used it internally also, just with our own staff for like some staff surveys to inform our sustainable development goals, voluntary local review. We just put one out. We used it for a climate adaptation plan that we were working on with Melanie, who was a former guest. But then we've been using it for our Greenways project. in Hazelwood. So what's really cool about it is that there's different tools within the tool. So you can, you know, there's like a mapping. What we used it for was a mapping exercise. So we were actually like on a Zoom call, but able to like put points on the map and then add stories. So like, you know, this is the location where, you know, one time I, you know, saw a big flood or something, and you could put it right on that map. And then it's kind of memorialized there, and, you know, we can go back to it and figure out where we should be doing some trail work, or where we should be putting a placard because there's a cool story right here. So, and then, you know, you could do it during the meeting. And then also anybody who missed the meeting, like Leo was saying, can come in and add their comments, or just see what happens during the meeting that they missed.
So you used it as like a real-time activity.
Yeah, I mean, you could do both. And then there's, you know, surveys or specific questions that you might be looking for, or, you know, you post when the next meeting is. There's a lot of functionality to it, which is kind of nice.
Awesome. That's great. Hey, so we're coming up on time. Typically, we ask folks, you know, what you're listening, reading, or watching in our final segment here on the Grant Street Experience, but it's the summer months. And so I know that kind of that curled up in a nook with the book is oftentimes something that is a fouler weather pastime. So I want to ask you guys, what's some of your plans for the summer and getting out and about? Any locations around the city or things that you guys are looking forward to? We'll start maybe with Leah.
Sure. Well, I know that I think last night was the grand opening of the Allegheny Overlook, which is, it's like a pop-up. It's a pop-up park downtown. So like talking about closing streets, they closed a street. They like painted the street, and there's picnic tables and the trees and all this kind of stuff. So I really want to check that out. I also acquired a pair of roller skates during the pandemic. Nice. So I am continuing.
Hold on, skates, to work on not blades.
Skates.
Whoa. Okay.
So maybe roller skating at the Allegheny Overlook.
Nice.
That's the smooth pavement that you're gonna hit?
Yeah, it's hard to find. I've been trying to do it on tennis courts, but people keep playing tennis on them. And
nerve.
I know.
The nerve of people.
Yeah, that's also not allowed, so don't do it.
Where's were you a roller skater growing up, or like what precipitated this?
I did have roller skates growing up. I was never serious about it, but it was sort of like a pandemic trend.
Okay.
There was actually like a shortage of roller skates at a certain point, because people started buying them up during the pandemic. I hopped on the bandwagon, and I'm not terrible at it. So I kept trying.
Now, are you like elbow pads, knee pads? Okay. All right.
Full gear. I'm not that coordinated.
That's awesome. How about you, Rebecca?
Nothing that exciting. I'm interested in exploring our greenways now that we're doing some greenway work. So there's 12 of them across the city.
Is this going to be like the new like hip it challenge? Like I hiked all 12 greenways in Pittsburgh? Or
I think so.
You should totally create the Pittsburgh Greenway Challenge.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And maybe it's like an Engage PGH Love Your Resilience block.
Oh, I love it.
That
Doing
could be
it.
Awesome.
Yep.
Totally awesome.
Good idea. Thanks. I'm stealing it.
Feel free. I only take 10% commission. So that's all it takes.
Are you going to start
with that? I'll get to me in a second. Are you going to start with Hazelwood, your beloved greenway, or?
Yeah. So the goats showed up yesterday.
Whoa!
I was going to go check out the goats later today.
So they're penned off, or are they just roaming free?
Yeah, the goats. They have a guard donkey named Hobo.
It's like a mini donkey.
Yeah, they're I think it's an electric fence, a solar electric fence that's set up there. So I'm gonna go see them.
That's pretty awesome. We were just asking, did that new restaurant in Hazelwood open up?
Yeah, Wood something.
Wood's Tavern.
I've heard it has, but I haven't been there yet.
Okay. Yeah, I was just talking about that this morning. I was like, oh, I don't know if it's open yet. My big summer events, summer for me starts tonight. A friend of mine called me. We haven't connected for a long time, and he rented a boat. So we're going to go. Yeah. So I'm going to go out on the river tonight and start summer officially. So cool. That, out on the water. So we're looking forward to that. And then, it's going to be like a weekend of water. Cause then we also have, a group of friends and I, we get together and we, every year we go up to the Kiskamenis River and we have a float trip. So we're going to do some kayaking over the weekend. And so I'm super looking forward to that. So
nice.
Followed by a stop at the infamous Salina Inn. So that's, if you ever get a chance to, it's a must do place. So I highly recommend it. Not that I'm sponsoring or officially promoting anything. Our official sponsor for this episode has been the Love Your Brazilian Block program. Awesome. Well, hey guys, it's so good talking with both of you. Leah, always excited to get together. And you know, we're so proud to have been a part of your early seeds being sown with the city of Pittsburgh, and great to see the work that you're doing as the Office of Community Affairs Manager and doing some great work with our neighborhood. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I always enjoy talking with you both. And I hope we can do it in person soon.
Yep, it's coming right around the bend. So we'll be in the office next week, I think. So we'll see you soon. All right. Thank you all. It's another great episode of the Grant Street Experience. Thanks to Rebecca and Leah for being with us today. And we will talk to you soon. Have a great day.